Hello and welcome to Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained. I'm Ness Jones. I am in Australia from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. And with me today is the lovely...
I am Stacey Bell from Focused Fun in the U.S. Today, we are talking about something you probably heard or read on the internet if you have a dog with separation-related behaviors, and that is the misconception that letting your dog cry it out is a viable solution for helping your dog feel more comfortable while home alone if they are currently uncomfortable. So let's unpack that, shall we, Ness?
Yeah, and this is the third or the fourth in our misconceptions series. I think it's
one of those two.
Yeah. Yes, so we are examining things that people believe they should be doing for their separation anxiety dogs, but maybe shouldn't. But it's interesting. So this topic was, I was talking about this, somebody contacted me yesterday for a discovery call, and that was one of the things they'd tried. They'd been all over Dr. Google trying to do their own research, and that was one of the things. And that's what their friends and family is, oh, they'll be right, just let them go. And what I say, Stacey?
What do you say?
I said, and did it work for you? And they said, no. And I said, there you go. It led to escalation instead of de-escalation.
Yeah. And I think this is probably one of the most common misconceptions that I hear and the most likely that people will try. Right. Like, because one of my questions on the intake form is, what have you already tried?
Yeah.
And I would say 80 to 90% of the people who come to me have tried letting their dog cry it out. And it's just not, it doesn't help. Right. So I do think it's really pervasive. And you even hear it from other professionals who maybe haven't read the more recent research, or, you know, haven't looked at the more updated training surrounding separation related behaviors. You'll even hear from some professionals telling you to let your dog cry it out.
And the problem is that it doesn't work. If the dog has separation anxiety, there is no settling. It just gets worse and worse and worse. So I don't know why that advice or where it came from. It's quite old school. And I think perhaps it's from, you know, maybe as a puppy, it literally cries itself out.
Well, and I think that's a really important thing to kind of talk about is, you know, a puppy trying to resettle themselves or maybe, you know, giving a little bit of a protest whine versus letting your dog cry out. Like, what does that difference look like? So how can we help people determine, okay, this is just, you know, a little bit of whining, maybe a bit of a protest versus my dog is panicking and clearly showing signs of anxiety. So for me, there's a couple things to really look at. And one of them is the intensity of the behavior. So if the puppy just kind of does a couple whines and then settles, I'm not really worried about that. It particularly for new puppies, since they, you know, were probably used to being around most of their litter mates and now they're home with you and they're alone and, you know, they might be giving a bit of a, I'd rather not. But if they're able to resettle, then that's fine. But when the puppy or dog is escalating, like you had mentioned, I do think that then that is where the real difference is. So some of the behaviors that we see when a dog is escalating is that their vocalizations become more intense or more frequent. They might start pawing at, if they're in a crate, they might start pawing at the door or biting at it. They might start shredding some of the bedding that's inside. They might start drooling or panting or What are some other things, that behaviors or body language, that you see, Ness?
Well, I mean, obviously soiling, defecating, or soiling yes. the house when they're house trained, things like that. Mm-hmm. Is this more even an edge? Like, it's a difference between a protest bark, for example, mm-hmm. or a bark where there's that edge of panic. And you can tell if you know your dog well, you can tell. I can tell, like, this is off topic a little bit, but I listen to my dogs and I know what their barks mean, whether they're alerting on something or whether it's something serious. And I was sitting here on my computer working a few weeks ago. Oh, actually, it was at the end of summer. And we get a lot of snakes here. And one of my dogs barking. She was in the bedroom and it was a bark that just it didn't sound right. It wasn't like, oh, the neighbors are making a noise up the back, or, you know, there's something that it
right.
sounded serious. And I'm like, whoa, mm-hmm. went dashing into the bedroom and there's this snake in the backyard.
I was like, oh my God. In the bedroom, and I was like, wah!
So I'm like, oh, I wanted to go and get a photo of it to see if I could identify it, because I didn't know if it was
right.
a snake, which are highly poisonous. Yes, and it crawled up into, I managed to keep the dogs in, and because she was like, you know, I'm getting out there. I'm going to go and get that snake.
You're like, no, thank you.
Goodness, she didn't. But, yeah, I got outside and, yes, it went off into the rocks, which was not good, because now it's probably hibernating in there over winter. Yes, anyway, so you can, if you know your dog, you can tell what their bark sounds like. And
we've kind of talked about this before, is how important it is to know your dog. So you don't have to be an expert in body language or behavior in general, but knowing what's kind of normal for your dog and, like you said, what different body language means for your dog, or what different vocalizations might mean for your dog. And it is a little tricky when you first get a puppy, or you first adopt a dog, because you're learning each other, right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So it is a little tricky. And, you know, I think we would both always recommend, if in doubt, reach out to a professional. Like, if you don't know what you're looking at, it is always better to reach out to a professional than to just kind of wait and see if your dog gets over it, because in most cases, that's really not going to happen.
And again, what we should mention is, dun, 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 what is it? The importance.
Video.
Yes.
It's a video. Yes. Yeah, that is really important. And like, just to kind of put this out there, is we never want you to put your dog in a scary situation to capture video. But if you have video of your dog from a previous time that you have left them, then we would want to see that, and we could maybe talk you through some of the body language we're seeing and what you should be looking out for with your dog when assessing their anxiety level. So I think the way that I explain why leaving your dog to cry it out doesn't work to people is that you don't learn to feel safe from fearful experiences, right? So if your dog is either left in a crate or left at home alone, either way, either free or in a crate, and they're having these panic experiences, they're not, as a result, going to start feeling safe when they're home alone, because their experiences are not even a little bit negative, but like super negative. So that's really going to typically make the behavior, the anxiety, more and more intense as the time goes on. So every time they have that negative experience, that reaction is typically intensified, and that anxiety is enhanced. And so actually, by letting them cry it out, usually the problem is getting worse.
Yeah. As you say, we see escalation of behavior. So initially the dog might just bark, and then it might be barking and howling, and then it might be pacing, and then you know, the next time it might be, I don't know, soiling or destroying something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so mm-hmm. rare that we see, in fact, well, we don't see de-escalation. We see the behaviors mm-hmm. Increase, if anything.
Yeah, yeah. I do think that sometimes mm-hmm. when there are some dogs that instead of showing an escalation in behavior will instead shut down, yeah. right? And so what you're seeing there as a result of that flooding, the dog is coming to a point of learned helplessness, right? Like nothing that they are doing is changing the situation. So they essentially shut down and stop behaving. And so for some people that can look like success to them because they're like, well, my dog's not destroying anymore. Yeah. But the problem with that is the mental state of the dog and even physiological state of the dog is still really, you know, in a negative state. And so we, welfare wise, we don't want our beloved dogs to be feeling that. And we don't want those, the long-term effects of the chronic stress to happen to our dogs either. So I do think that even if your dog isn't destroying, but they are in that state of learned helplessness, it is still something that's really, really important to address.
Yeah. Should we examine flooding a bit more? What, just so people know what we're talking about, as opposed to
sure.
gradual exposure to safe
access. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think that's kind of important to look at the difference of those two ways of approaching fears and phobias and why we would pick gradual exposure as opposed to flooding.
I'm just trying beef liver treats for my dogs because they've been they're being dickheads. When you're recording podcasts too early in the morning, you haven't got them out.
Yeah.
Yes. So let's talk about my cockroach analogy.
Go for it.
So I'm terrified of cockroaches, and anybody that has been watching or listening will know this already. And I guess flooding would be exposing me to them in a way that I don't feel safe. In a way that
I saw this, I don't even know. I don't watch TV that much, and I don't know, like I do watch Netflix, so I'm not like I'm not putting a judgment out there, but so I don't watch TV that much, but I can't remember like how I was exposed to this thing, but there was a guy that put somebody who is afraid of roaches in like a giant
container. Yeah.
Yeah. And put them in it and then poured all the roaches and then put a lid on it. I also don't like roaches, but probably not to the extent that you don't like them. And I could not imagine but that would be flooding, wouldn't it, for you? Like, that would be extreme flooding.
And would that help me overcome my fear of cockroaches?
Well, I don't think so.
So was this like I don't know, what one of those I'm a Celebrity shows or something silly like that?
I can't even remember. I just remember that image or that like clip and the like response that I felt to that was like, holy moly, like I can't even imagine like being able to tolerate like that, you know. And I guess like some people might totally freeze and do kind of that learned helplessness thing where you feel like you have no control over the situation, so doing anything's not going to help because you're like literally in this coffin like box with roaches crawling all over you. And then some people would maybe, you know, do everything they could to fight, claw their way out of there. But both responses are not positive responses, you know, or not learning what we're probably hoping that the person learns to overcome. Now there is, there can be success from flooding, but there's a very big chance that it's going to backlash, right? So I think especially with dogs where we can't, where we can't say, okay, I'm going to expose you to this. And at the other side of it, we'll talk about how you were able to survive that. So it's not a scary thing. Like, since we can't do the kind of talk therapy surrounding that experience, I think it's I think there's an ethical piece there, definitely, as well as a, you know, is the success rate a lot lower than even with humans because of that lack of making the link?
Understand what's going on. What was the guy in the box doing? Was he scared? Was he shut down or was he coping or trying to?
I can't remember that. I think I stopped watching it because I was just horrified.
As you were talking, I was thinking about, I wonder where my fear of cockroaches comes from. And there was a show years ago, a movie actually called Creepshow, and I was young and impressionable. And there was like five different stories or something. And one of them was this guy in an apartment and there was cockroaches everywhere in his cornflakes package. In the end, they're coming out of his mouth and his eyes and his nose.
Oh, gross.
That's gross. Yeah. Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking, yeah, it's probably where it came from.
Yeah.
I'm too young to be watching that. But anyway, moving on.
Moving on.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, when we train our clients, we don't use flooding. We use gradual exposure to safe absences. So that is a lot kinder, for starters, than exposing a dog to a scary absence and expecting it's a sink or swim kind of scenario, isn't it, flooding?
Right.
Which is kind of appropriate considering it's called flooding, you know.
Right.
Analogy.
Yeah. I like it. If Sarah was here, we could tie in something with her boat, but.
Yeah. Well, she's not, though. So gradual exposure to safe absences is a lot nicer for the dog.
It's a much gentler approach. So what would that look like for the cockroaches-ness?
We've had this conversation. It's not going to work with the cockroaches.
And like sometimes we do try to desensitize our dogs to things, and you know, it can feel like we can't find that starting place. You know, we can't because with gradual exposure, we figure out what the starting place is. Like, what does the dog feel comfortable with now? And for some dogs, that's you just standing up and taking two steps towards the door. And some dogs, it's just you standing up. And, you know, so we start with what the dog is comfortable with now. And then we gradually increase, you know, you walking towards the door, opening the door, going out the door, and then building duration. And sometimes it's hard to even get kind of a foothold. And I think that's what you're explaining with how you feel about cockroaches, right? And so in cases like that with our separation anxiety clients, we would just break down the steps really, really small, as small as we could to start the approximations. But what also can really help with dogs where you're really having trouble finding that starting place is to look at kind of a more holistic approach. Like, what else is going on with this dog? Are they getting the nutrition they need? Are they getting the physical and mental enrichment that they need? Are they generally fearful? Do they have other behavioral struggles that are contributing to their stress level? Would medication be a added benefit to support them through training? So you kind of like start to, I mean, I think we do that with all our clients, but especially with those clients, we really want to be looking at that full context is to help them find that kind of starting place.
Yeah, taking a bit more of a holistic approach. You're seeing what else is going on. And sometimes, I mean, you know, it could be a medical issue, allergy,
totally,
gastro, pain, dementia.
I've had two clients within the last month or so have like some serious pain related issues that weren't necessarily obvious.
Yeah, right.
You know, to the pet parents right away. And it was one of those things where we're like, she's putting a little bit more weight on this leg than this leg. Let's dig deeper. Yeah. And then it ends up being kind of like a big deal thing that's contributing a fair amount of pain to the dog. So things that even like that don't seem to be, you know, very evident on the surface, because, you know, a lot of times our pets will kind of shield that a little bit, like they don't show their pain. And even people, like if you think, you know, I might have slept wrong and my neck really hurts,
but
people at the grocery store aren't going to know my neck hurts, or you know, by or
you know, I'm going to be doing a scowl on your face things. And they're like, gosh, she's crazy.
Why is she so fussy today? I mean, but they wouldn't know it. Like I could maybe be really fussy and they would think, wow, she's just really a fussy person, but it could be that I have chronic neck pain.
Yeah.
And, you know, the same thing could be with your pet, is that the reason why you're seeing the behavior that you're seeing could be because of
totally
some chronic issue or even acute issue.
So, I've had two clients where they've been going up nicely in time and then they've had major hiccups. One of them had allergies. Once that was sorted out, started going up again. And the other one had ear problems. And that ears are nasty things, aren't they? When you're in pain from your ear, you're in pain. And
it's hard to
concentrate or do stuff. So that's an important thing to keep an eye out for, that's for sure. I think with puppies, we should probably puppies. We also do make sure they're getting enough enrichment, age appropriate exercise.
That's right.
And then identify whether they've got frustration, or any dog, but frustration, or are they just FOMO dogs, fear of missing out?
Right. And I think especially when you're, and we have podcasts just on puppies, but I think it bears to just bring it up here, is that especially when you're trying to teach a puppy how to be home alone, let's make sure that we're doing that at a time when they're naturally settled. We don't want to pick that like 4 o'clock witching hour or whatever time it is for your dogs.
Yes,
the zoomies. We don't want to try then. And, you know, just making sure that, like Ness said, that the puppy has had some mental and physical enrichment, that that the puppy isn't like expecting a meal. And the same with dogs. A lot of times if they're expecting something, like to go for their normal walk or something like that. Yeah. That's not a good time to work on home alone time. And then also, especially with puppies, but really with any dog, is that, you know, mind the potty schedule. And if you think your puppy or dog might have to go to the bathroom soon, go ahead and take them out before the exercise, because the last thing you want is to have a backslide in potty training because you're working, or for the dog to feel uncomfortable or conflicted because they really have to go to the bathroom, but you're not there to let them out and all of that stuff. It just adds layers that you don't really want in the picture, especially that early in the game. So it's really important to just kind of think about setting the puppy or dog up for success in those early days.
Yeah, for sure. So, yes, I guess anything else?
I don't think so. No. How about you?
No, I think the bottom line is letting them cry it out is not very kind. Can escalate the situation instead of de-escalate it. And, it's not really achieving anything. The dogs that settle when they are, as you said, you know, the dogs that will cry it out, they mm-hmm. could be shut down. And unless you know what you're looking at, you may not recognize that. Or perhaps it works because they really haven't got separation anxiety so much, but it's more they were protesting or they were a little bit frustrated and they got it out of their system and then they mm-hmm. a bit calmer.
Yeah.
What would you say, Stacey, to people that say, oh, my dog barked for a little while and cried and then it was quiet, then it did it again and then it was quiet?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think some of the studies actually about separation related behavior showed that there can be a cyclical nature. Some dogs will bark the whole darn time or destroy or do whatever their kind of behavior, their coping behavior is. But some dogs are kind of cyclical in that. And so, yeah, I think it's still something to address. Your dog is still feeling anxiety or panic while home alone, and so it is still something you have to work through, even if they had those periods where it seems like they settle a little bit before they start barking again. That's a good thing to bring up.
Yeah, and I guess for me that would come down to what it looks like on camera as well. What is going on mm-hmm. during that settling? Are they really settled or are they just quiet?
Right.
What does it look like? Yeah. Thank you for listening to another episode of Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained. I'm Ness Jones and I am in Australia, but both Stacey and I do work remotely. But I am from Separation Anxiety and Dogs Decoded.
And I am Stacey Bell in the US from Focus Fund. If you have a dog that is struggling with separation related behaviors, reach out to one of us. We both have kind of free discovery calls, short and quick, to tell you more about what training with us entails and what our packages entail. So our websites are in the show notes. Reach out to us that way if you're looking for some support. Thanks for joining us today.
Bye. See ya.